Welcome everyone to our weekly Course in Miracles study group. I'm so happy to be back with all of you. And we will be reading Cameo 31 tonight. It is called The Priestess. So before we dive in, let's do as we always do and take a few moments to connect and join together in silence. So if you're able, allowing your eyes to close. And before we started recording, I was sharing a term that I'm incorporating into my From Anxiety to Love masterclass called Holy Instant Hugs. And we're going to do this virtually. Healing happens through our relationships. And it takes just one person willing to see with the Holy Spirit's vision, to awaken that same perfect knowing of our truth in the other, who can then return the Holy Spirit's vision and see only the truth in the other. So I'm going to invite you to choose someone in your mind. This someone, can, it doesn't matter if they're living or if they've passed. It can be a loved one, a friend, a relative. It can be someone in this group. It can be Jesus, whoever you feel most drawn to at this moment. And I just want you to imagine this person standing in front of you and you're facing each other. And in your mind, asking this other individual to see only the truth in you. And recognizing that you will return the favor. You will be willing to see only the truth in them. And in your mind, you can imagine just looking at each other. As you both have stated your intention, your willingness to see only the truth in the other. And in your mind, maybe even imagining hugging, embracing, standing close together and just joining in this instant. As each of you practices being willing to see only the truth in the other. Because as you do this, it awakens the awareness of who you are in both of you, which is whole, a recognition of your complete innocence, a knowing of your eternal being, and a recognition that nothing can change the truth. Nothing can change the truth of who you are. You, as the Holy Son of God Himself, have dominion over all things because of who you are and how you were created. And that's a loving dominion and being one with everything. And in your mind, you can either stay just with this image of hugging this individual where you're just joined and embracing, or you can imagine just sort of stepping apart and just saying thank you and knowing that you are inseparable. And just imagining feeling gratitude for this other person. And dropping into the breath. This holy instant we give to you. Be you in charge, for we would follow you. Certain that your direction gives us peace. If we need a word, a thought, or a tranquil, open mind, these are the gifts that Holy Spirit gives. And we gladly place Holy Spirit in charge tonight by our request. So taking a nice, mindful, deep breath in and out. And coming together to our perception of right here, right now. I missed you all last week. Our session, Freedom and I, we did our two sessions on racism and A Course in Miracles, and they were really, really powerful. I had a feeling come over me after the first session, and I expressed this to Freedom, and she felt the same thing. It was a feeling of just purpose and feeling like you just did exactly what the Holy Spirit asked you to do. So it was good. All right, so we're going to be reading. Oh, thank you for the thumbs up. We're going to be reading again, Cameo 31, The Priestess tonight. We have one more cameo after this, and then we're going to be transitioning into reading the Manual for Teachers, which I feel super excited about. So I love this cameo and this story about Helen's past life visions. So let's go ahead and dive in. So Cameo 31, The Priestess, it is on page 1866 of the CE. It begins. Lesson 109 in the workbook, I Rest in God, contains a clear reference to an apparent past life vision Helen had in the summer of 1965, following her agreement to join Bill in another way, and preceding the dictation of the course, which would commence some months later. The vision was of Helen as a priestess in the distant past, and it turned out to be remarkably prescient for her future. This vision, echoed in Lesson 109, was actually the third inner vision she had that summer that depicted her as an ancient priestess. In her very first inner vision, she saw some sort of priestess who was heavily draped and kneeling with a bowed head, heavy chains twisted around her wrists and ankles. This vision would recur almost daily, and as it did, quote, the chains began to drop away and she began to raise her head. Very slowly, she finally stood up with only a short, unconnected length of chain still tied to her left wrist. The priestess then raised her eyes to look at Helen, and Helen, after at first looking away in fear, eventually returned her gaze, only to discover that the eyes of the priestess were full of innocence and saw absolutely nothing in Helen that warranted condemnation. Then Helen says, I was suddenly swept away by a sense of joy so intense I could hardly breathe. Aloud, I asked, does this mean I can have my function back? The answer, silent but perfectly clear, was, of course. I would not have believed it was possible to experience such happiness as that answer called forth in me, and for a little while I kept repeating, how wonderful, oh, how wonderful. This image, so this is the commentary that continues. This image of the priestess seems to be a vivid symbol for what Jesus would soon call the soul, a divine element in our nature that retains its heavenly purity, feels shackled by our commitment to separation. Once the course dictation began, Jesus used a similar image in relation to Bill. Bill had made a Freudian slip, and Jesus said this slip was an expression of a soul gaining enough strength to request freedom from prison. It will ultimately demand it. So here we have the same basic concept applied to both Helen and Bill, which naturally raises the question of whether this concept is true for us as well. Is there, in other words, a pure soul in each of us that has been imprisoned, yet is now rising to freedom? The second priestess vision, 30 to 31, I'm assuming that's her age, the other one was 29, could not have been more opposite. In this one, Helen was the high priestess of an ancient society, only now she was an evil priestess. I'm guessing she was like a witch. Her religion was her, quote, religion was power and enslavement. In this life, Bill was the leader of a slave revolt, quote, who had managed to steal the large center ruby from the priestess's crown. It was not an ordinary ruby. It gave its wearer magical powers. He had, however, been caught, and Helen was about to execute him by thrusting a spear between his eyes. However, at the last second, she threw down the spear, signifying that Bill would live and she would die. The final scene was of her walking into exile in the scorching desert where death awaited her, furious with herself for dying for a rebellious slave who was nothing but a common thief. Then comes the third priestess vision, and in parentheses 31 to 32, the one that is echoed in lesson 109. So this is Helen again. The next scene, in order of appearance, seemed to be so ancient that it appeared as if it was taking place at the very beginning of time. I was a priestess again, but this time of a very different kind. This priestess was, in fact, much like the one with the innocent eyes I had watched emerging from heavy chains into freedom. She was hidden from the world in a small white marble temple set in a broad and very green valley. I was not sure that her body was entirely solid. Actually, what was seen was little more than an outline of a small, slender woman dressed in white, who never came further into the world than the doorway of the little room, which contained a plain wooden altar. A small flame burned on it, sending up a steady column of white smoke. The priestess stayed close to the altar, sitting on a low wooden stool and praying with eyes closed for those who came to her for help. Sometimes I saw only the valley outside the temple. At times there seemed to be no one there, but at other times there was a huge column of people marching together very joyously. The column seemed to extend endlessly in both directions, and I could somehow feel the deep sense of freedom and unity each individual was experiencing as he marched ahead to certain victory. I was not sure what the exact role of the priestess was in helping them all, but I was somehow convinced that her prayers made a vital contribution. I was also sure that people came to her for help from all over. Some, in fact, from very far away. They did not, however, speak to her directly. They knelt on the ledge that ran around a low wall, which separated the inner and outer parts of the temple, and stated their needs to a man who seemed to be serving as a sort of intermediary between the priestess and the world. He remained in a large enclosed space that separated the priestess from those who came for help. The man conveyed their needs to her. Helen continues to say, I did not see the man's face for some time, and it took me even longer to recognize him as Bill. He played a crucial role in enabling the priestess to fulfill her function. When people told him what they needed, he went to the door of her room and merely told her that there had been a request for help. He said only that a brother had come for healing, and then he asked for help on behalf of the brother. The priestess never asked anyone for anyone's name, nor the details of his request. She prayed for everyone in the same way, sitting very quietly beside the flame on the altar. It never occurred to her that help would not be granted. She never really left God's side, and she remained peacefully certain of his presence there in the room with her. I was sure she was myself, and yet I was not sure. What was certain was that I watched her with great love. And then this is a paragraph of commentary. This image of Helen as a priestess, though it came from visions that preceded the course, was so significant that it cropped up repeatedly once the course dictation began. For instance, near the end of what is now chapter one, we find in the notes these comments from Helen, which clarify the request Bill made to the priestess and the prayer process she then went through. And it says, "Priestess, a brother has knelt at your shrine. Heal him through me. I have an idea that the shrine," this is Helen speaking, "I have an idea that the shrine merely referred to the altar within, which the priestess served. I imagine that the communication was direct, and the quote brother always nameless. I think the priestess responded automatically by praying directly to God, standing with upraised arms to draw down a blessing on her brother, who knelt outside. Her response was completely automatic and impersonal." Impersonal means that her response was not based on anything special or unique about the recipient. "She never even thought of checking the outcome because there was no doubt." Imagine that. She never even thought of checking the outcome because there was no doubt. "I imagine there is still no doubt, really, except that the priestess can no longer ask alone. It was originally sister, not priestess." In addition to this, there are a few places in Helen's early notes where Jesus refers to the priestess. One describes her function. "The role of the priestess was once," where Jesus is referring to the priestess. "The role of the priestess was once to experience revelations and work miracles. The purpose was to bring those not yet available for direct revelations into proper focus for them. Heightened perception was always the essential priestess attribute." The commentary continues now. "The priestess, in other words, was meant to have experiences of oneness with God, revelations, which would leave in her mind a state of heightened perception. She would then extend that heightened perception to others in the form of miracles, and this would ready them for what had been so far been out of their reach, their own experiences of oneness with God." Another reference to the priestess in what is now chapter four praises Helen for being, quote, "both wise and devoted in claiming your scribal functions and working so late." This seems to refer to Helen receiving guidance about a woman's unconscious dynamics in relation to her husband. We read about that cameo in cameo 16. Jesus implies that by receiving this message, Helen was being a devoted priestess. He then later says, "I need devoted teachers as much as I need devoted priestesses. They heal the mind, and that is always my own aim." The commentary continues now. "This theme of the priestess, therefore, runs through both Helen's early visions and her early dictation. In essence, it signifies a role, the role of mediator between the spiritual dimension and the world. The priestess is in direct contact with the spiritual dimension. Quote, she never really left God's side. She's able to, quote, experience revelations. And because of her contact with that dimension, its blessings can flow through her to others. Her prayers can make a vital contribution to those who seek help. Her eyes can convey to them the innocence they didn't realize was within. Her messages can heal the mind. Her miracles can open the door to revelation. According to her visions, this is a role that Helen had once completely embodied, yet that was in the distant past. This is clear in the first vision, in which the priestess was kneeling near a fire that, quote, appeared to be associated with an ancient religious rite. It is especially clear in the third vision, which seemed to depict a scene so ancient that it appeared as if it was taking place at the very beginning of time. Since that primeval time, she had clearly fallen away from this high function. We see this most starkly in the second vision, in which, still in ancient times, Helen was a priestess who used her paranormal powers not to heal and bless, but to dominate and enslave. This brings us to her life as Helen, where for her first 56 years, her identity as the ancient priestess was entirely submerged. This identity, though, was not merely a past role. It remained a living presence within her. It was, in a sense, her soul identity, which, though currently bound and shackled, was waiting for the opportunity to rise up and resume its ancient function. And so when Bill declared there must be another way, and Helen agreed to join him in it, the chains began to fall away and the priestess began to stir to life. I'll pause here for a moment because we just did a lot of reading. So these visions are quite striking. Helen as a priestess, two of those visions were of her using her ability to listen to the voice, to be tuned in with God. She in two of those visions used it for good, and in another lifetime used those gifts for the ego. I'll just say, and then I'd love to hear if anybody has any comments, questions, or just insights or anything that stands out to you. What stands out to me is the idea of the soul and how our soul is in chains because of our devotion to separation, our devotion to being bodies, our devotion to being, you know, completely distracted by the external world. And yet every time we choose a miracle, every time we tune into the Holy Spirit, it's as if our soul starts to rise up and those shackles become loosened and start to fall off. And we set our soul free as we say yes to the Holy Spirit. And I almost feel like I get a palpable sense of that. So that's all I have to say. Anybody have any insights or anything that stands out to you that you feel moved to share? Mary Beth.
Yeah, as you were the whole shackled by the thought of separation and just coming and going to the Holy Spirit for healing or being that conduit. I mean, I could feel all that. But what really came, especially going into the third vision, was it spoke to me of the manual for teachers, and I just thought it ironic that we're almost there, because I thought the visions really talked, anyone can be a teacher, and that's what mm-hmm. Helen was seeing. So even though she was caught up in the ego aspect of it too, she had the teacher within her if she just recognized herself within herself.
Yeah,
and anyone can be that mediator, from what I understand with the manual for teachers. Mm-hmm. And so I just thought the timing was quite ironic there. But I could really experience the visions.
Yeah, me too. Thank you, Mary Beth. And thank you so much for making that connection for us between what we're reading now and the manual for teachers. And 100%, yes. And all are called, you know, we're all teaching all the time. And the manual for teachers is absolutely that, you know, each one of us is a student and a teacher. And so I'm just grateful that you made that connection for us. So thank you. Oh, anybody else before we keep reading? All right, let's keep going. So at the top of page 1871, I guess it's the first full paragraph. The form of her ministry would take in this life, the form her ministry would take in this lifetime would be very different than in the past, of course. Rather than conducting religious rites or sending out prayers from inside a marble temple, Helen would be a conduit for the blessings of the spiritual dimension through the messages she took down. This was how she would pass on to others the heightened perception that she had the gift of accessing within herself. In Helen's function as scribe of A Course in Miracles, therefore, the priestess emerged from the past to resume her ancient role. In fact, the specific image of the priestess in the temple is almost uncannily mirrored in Helen's eventual role as scribe of the Course. Just as the priestess communed with God and then sent out the blessings from that in the form of prayers, so Helen communed with Jesus and sent out the blessings from that in the form of spiritual teachings. Just as Bill, quote, played a crucial role in enabling the priestess to fulfill her function, and isn't that so cool that she recognized him in that vision, so he did the same with Helen. Only now, instead of relaying messages from the people, Bill relayed messages to the people from Helen through his typewriter. In both cases, though, his support was what completed the circuit, allowing this solitary figure to reach the people for whom her blessings were intended. And just as the priestess's prayers attracted a huge column of people marching together very joyously, so Helen's messages have touched countless lives through A Course in Miracles and the works inspired and influenced by it. Now we can grasp the true significance of what happened at the end of her first vision, where she asked, "Does this mean I can have my function back?" And then heard the silent but perfectly clear answer, "Of course." That is exactly what happened. The ancient priestess did get her function back, and millions have been blessed thereby. Yet how could any of that have been known when Helen first saw her vision of the priestess in the temple months before she heard the words, "This is A Course in Miracles, please take notes"? How could she know that she was seeing a vision not only of her past, but also of her future? Given the significance of the image of the priestess, it is not surprising that we find echoes of it in the Course. The first is in the text section titled, "The Reflection of Holiness." This section represents an image of a temple where, quote, "holiness waits quietly for the return of them that love it." And then it says that you can become a spotless mirror in which the holiness of your Creator shines forth from you to all around you. And when you do this, it says, others will come to you for the healing of their problems through, quote, "the image of holiness that shines in your mind." Here's a quote from the Course. "They bring their different problems to its healing light, but all their problems are met only with healing there. The response of holiness to any form of error is always the same. Its one response is healing without any regard for what is brought to it." I want to read that last sentence one more time. "Its one response is healing without any regard for what is brought to it." We can readily see here echoes of the holy priestess in her temple, waiting for those who will come to it, serving as a pure conduit for the light of God, and responding to everyone's problems with the exact same gift of healing, without regard for any of the individual details. As we mentioned at the beginning of this cameo, though, the clearest reference to Helen's priestess vision is found in Workbook Lesson 109, "I Rest in God." The quote is, You rest within the peace of God today and call upon your brothers from your rest to draw them to their rest along with you. You will be faithful to your trust today, forgetting no one, bringing everyone into the boundless circle of your peace, the holy sanctuary where you rest. Open the temple doors and let them come from far across the world and near as well. Your distant brothers and your closest friends, bid them all enter here and rest with you. You rest today within the peace of God, quiet and unafraid. Each brother comes to take his rest and offer it to you. We rest together here, for thus our rest is made complete. And what we give today, we have received already. So the commentary continues. The parallels with Helen's vision are unmistakable. We have here a temple occupied by someone who is sunk deep in communion with God. And to this temple comes a multitude of others, some from very far away, to partake in the spiritual blessings that radiate from this person. The difference, of course, is that here, the pattern is applied to us. The above passage is part of this lesson's meditation instructions. Given that it clearly alludes to the vision of the priestess, it implies that when we meditate, we should see ourselves as serving the same role that the priestess did. We typically think of meditation as a solitary activity, but the idea here is just as the priestess prayed to send out healing to the huge column that came to her temple, so when we meditate, we should consciously invite everyone into our temple to draw them into the boundless circle of our peace. Much the same could be said of the earlier passage from The Reflection of Holiness. There, we are also asked to be what the priestess was, a channel of healing, who has brought a variety of different problems by different people, but who offers to all of them the exact same response, healing. The end of the story, therefore, is not that Helen repeated her ancient role as the priestess, and we are the beneficiaries of that, as uplifting as that is. The end of the story is that we, as Helen's spiritual heirs, are called to repeat the role of the priestess ourselves. We are meant to have our own temple and cultivate there our own connection to God. And then, like Helen, we are meant to pass on the priceless blessing of that connection to others. Perhaps then, we should see the following passage about extending God's peace, which is clearly reminiscent of the priestess, as describing our own life purpose. Quote, "And you will carry its message of love and safety and freedom to everyone who draws nigh unto your temple, where healing waits for him." And that concludes Cameo 31. So isn't this beautiful? These three visions that Helen has, and we're not just stopping at this idea that, oh, Helen had these lovely visions. She had these past lives. She came back, she fulfilled her priestess role, and we get to, you know, reap the benefits of her clear channel through the course, but that the calling is that each of us fill this role of this priestess, of developing our relationship with the Holy Spirit, and from there extending miracles, performing miracles, letting those miracles flow through us out into the world, which thus that helps us remember and experience the truth of ourselves, which awakens it in others too. So it's a call for all of us to be willing to remember our priestess role. And I would also say too, to remember, as I shared before, that every time we choose a miracle, every time we turn to the Holy Spirit, our soul becomes less and less shackled and rises up. And it's, I'm sure we've all had that feeling. Maybe even, I know I can recognize that feeling the first time I read the course, like that very, very first time I opened A Course in Miracles and I read nothing can be, oh my gosh, nothing real can be threatened. Nothing unreal exists. Herein lies the peace of God. And I literally, my logical mind went, huh? And something deep in me stirred. That was my soul, like standing up and being like, thank God you found this book that's speaking truth. I'm sure we've all had moments of just reading something in the course and feeling that feeling of your soul perking up and being so happy. So what's coming up for you? Questions, comments, insights, what stands out to you? Or any questions about anything, maybe not even related to the cameo. We have, what do we have? About 15 minutes to chat. How fun.
I have another comment.
Sure.
It strikes me the different times, the ancient, the different times that Helen was a priestess in the different ways. And then even presently through the course, it spoke to me too, that there is no time, right? There is no time. There is no past, future, mm-hmm. present, that tiny, tiny tick of time. Is that what mm-hmm. they say? Or is it the holy instant? So just that whatever given moment in the illusion, it's mm-hmm. always there.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you, Mary Beth. That idea of there being no time, just sort of one way that I think about it is that like, it's all happening right now. Like it's literally all a dream that's happening right now. And it seems, you know, in a linear sense with our brains that it happened before, but that it's all an aspect of the dream that's being dreamt right now. And so there isn't such a thing, even though it sure seems very, very real. Thank you, Mary Beth. Oh, what else? What else comes up for you reading the cameo, or anybody have any other thoughts to share? Experiences, miracles, lessons. I got nothing. I'm kidding, but one thing I'll just add, I guess, since Dave, did you just come off of mute?
I did. it's nothing much, but in regards to your Loveland venture, I think I mentioned this. There's a movie called the Green Book, which is really absolutely excellent and one of my favorite movies. And it's about, you know, a bar bouncer guy who basically is a chauffeur for
I remember you mentioning this.
A black man who is an accomplished pianist and mm-hmm. speaks a number of languages and whatnot. And they're just completely on opposite ends of the, you know, the spectrum, and they have to take this road trip together, and they slowly become best friends. And mm-hmm. Anyway, an outstanding movie.
Thank you.
Dealing with racial ideas and mm-hmm. and how race doesn't mean anything. mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Beautiful. Yeah. Thank you, Dave. Thank you. I'll have to check that out.
Yeah. Sure.
Corinne, can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, you speak about the peace that you find within yourself. Now, I think, I don't know what the Course speaks of that much, but I think the peace that I share with another person is more beautiful than the peace within me. Because the peace within me, in essence, the peace within me can be very isolating. I can withdraw into that peace, or if put it this way, I can withdraw into a castle of peace of my own, away from any disturbance, etc., just for myself. Mm-hmm. Or the peace I share is different. The peace I share is the peace I bring to another person.
Mm-hmm.
And now, you, a week or two back, you said something. I don't want you just isolating. I want you to share this with people or bring it to people. But you said you have to want to. And what I really like to know is, what is the basis of this want?
Alan, good question. Well, the basis of the want, I don't remember saying that, but I believe you.
That's okay.
The basis of the want is like, just like you're saying, do you want to hide out and just keep it for yourself and protect yourself and shut yourself in because it feels like that's the only way to preserve it, which I would say is like an ego-based piece, or is the basis of like truly feeling that you're an open channel, because love wants to flow. It doesn't want to be stopped. Love wants to extend. It wants to flow. And if we're not blocking it with the ego's job is to try to block it. If we're not blocking it, the basis of wanting to share it is wanting not only the peace for yourself, but for everything to know that peace. Because I mean, that's the only way. That's how the Course teaches, you know, to give and to receive are one in truth. We can't just figure it out on our own and keep it without giving it. Because to give and to receive are one in truth. We have to give it to know it. So the basis of wanting to do it is like, well, you know, I go back to like, the ego's not going to want to share it. And the truth in you does, you know, who you really are absolutely wants to let those miracle impulses flow through you. So, yeah.
No, I like your analysis of the ego-based versus the love-based response. It comes back to the ego again.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yep. Pesky little thing.
Pesky.
Thank you, Alan.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Dave, did I see your hand?
Yeah, I just was going to say, I think, you know, it's really a very natural thing that when you discover something really good, really great, you know, the first thing you want to do is share it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not like it's, it's not like it's a complicated thing, you know?
Mm-hmm. It's funny. Thanks for saying that, Dave, because I can remember when I first started studying the course, it was like, oh my God, everybody has to know this cool thing that I found and, you know, wanting to just like tell everyone. And yet in that moment, looking back, I can now so clearly see how ego-driven that was, because it was like this thing that I had to tell people about. There is always that urge there to want to share, though. That's like, I feel like a basic principle that you're tapping into. And yeah, I can see how I have tapped into that principle and used it, you know, for ego purposes. So.
You mean like you're going to proselytize? You're going to tell the world?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, no, not like I've, you know, it was that urge to not publicly, but like, you know, wanting my dad to do it, wanting, you know, people, my family, they got to do this because they're messed up and this will help, you know, exactly. Something like that.
Gotcha.
Thanks, Steve. Oh, anyone else have any insights or things to share? It's nice to have time to chat.
I got something really random.
Go for it, Steve.
Kind of like your random black and white screen for your computer.
Uh-huh.
some time ago, I don't know where this thought dropped into my mind, but it was validated probably about 2 months ago. But I started turning my Wi-Fi off at night. I got it on a little timer. And so I think it's 8:00 at night. My Wi-Fi drops off, doesn't come on until 5 in the morning. And oh my God, my dreams have just gotten really, really good. You know, I go to sleep with some intention and I get answers. And I don't know if it's interrelated, but I think that might be. So just another technological inversion, if you will, or a way to beat the system, I guess.
Interesting.
you know, sleeping really well and just having just wild, wild dreams. So maybe give that a try.
Yeah. Thank you for that tip. Thank you very much. I love random facts and random tips. So thank you.
It could be just my own that I've just created. It seems to work. So I'm good with it.
That's great. That's great. Thank you again. You know, I just wanted to come back to clarifying. I remember, Dave, just when you were making that movie recommendation about the Green Book and you mentioned race not mattering, obviously I know exactly what you were saying. And that was that we all can love each other and our love and join, you know, no matter what. And like with what we're doing in the Love Lens is almost saying that's an awareness and a knowing that is like the destination, but that there are steps we have to go through to come to that realization by looking, examining biases, you know, that sort of thing. There's one of my favorite diagrams from the Love Lens is, for those of you who are familiar with it, is the bypass diagram, where there's a leaping bypass arc on the top with all the course quotes that we love of like, you know, we're not bodies, we're one. There is no race, blah, blah, blah. And yet we tend to ignore all of those quotes on the bottom of the diagram that are prompting us to look. So I just wanted to make that point. So thank you for that. Anybody else? We can end a few minutes early. Hi, Carla.
I got something.
Who just shared? Is it Cheryl? Oh, there you are. There's your square. Hi.
First, I want to ask if you can hear me better.
I think so. Yes. Much better.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Sorry. Cause, I had to buy a new microphone just so you could hear me.
Oh my goodness. Well, so, I'm glad we can hear you. Thank you.
So I wanted to go back to something you said at the beginning about, feeling like that there's a lot of, the invisible that's out there helping us, like, mm-hmm. and you said something about angels and ancestors and stuff. Mm-hmm. I've like really been feeling that lately. And somebody posted a link to a podcast that Emily and Robert did, mm-hmm. On angels and, mm-hmm. and A Course in Miracles, which I never knew that there was any, I never noticed that there was reference to angels in A Course in Miracles. So if anybody's interested, that they do have this podcast, and it was really good because they talk about, I'm laughing because Deidre looks like she knows something that we don't know. She's like, yes, there are angels all around us. She needs to chime in, but I'll just say real quick that I feel like that there are angels all around me, and I have this
I'm losing you. Your volume is disappearing. I don't know what happened. I could hear you really clear, and it was like the volume button went down.
Okay, well, I'll let Deidre jump in.
Oh, I still want to hear what you have to say.
No, she doesn't want to.
No.
I don't know. Can you hear me now?
It's really faint again.
Oh, okay. That's all right.
Bummer. Well, Cheryl, I'll just pick up on the angel thread and say, yes, there are references to just a few references in the course to angels. I also ignored them for years and was like, angels, whatever. And I don't remember now what opened me up. And I'm hearing a very faint echo. So if anybody is unmuted, if you would just please mute yourself. I'm not sure where it's coming from.
It's one of the phone calls.
Oh, let me, okay. You know what? I'm going to mute all. Okay. So thank you for Cheryl. I was closed off to angels for a very long time. I remember that podcast. There are references in the course, and Deidre, you've been a big, I feel like Deidre, something that you must have shared or something that we must have talked about changed my mind and really opened me up to angels. And now I am like absolutely convinced. Mm-hmm. I was going through a challenging time for a certain length of time, and I kept getting the message to hold steady. Uh-huh. And I started writing down, Deidre, I messaged you about this. I started writing in my planner the times when I'd glance at the clock and it would be, you know, 1-1-1, 2-2-2, 3-3-3, 4-4-4. Mm-hmm. And it was happening multiple times a day at certain very specific like times when I was having a specific thought about something for days. And it's not happening anymore, but it was for this chunk of time. And I know some people might call that, I don't know if it's called like selection bias. I feel like there's a psychological or psychology explanation, but to me, it was an affirmation of the guidance that I was getting to hold steady. And it was nonstop. So I had also previously shared a link to angelic Reiki meditation. I'd shared this a while ago, and I heard from some of you like, oh, Corinne, that was an interesting meditation, but it's all about angels. And because I think it mentions fairies. I haven't met or had any relationship with fairies yet. So that's approaching my boundaries perhaps of comfort, but this angel meditation has been very helpful for me. And it's all about angels helping you cut karmic ties to past stuff. Deidre, you're off of mute, so I'm hoping you're going to share.
I guess I'll share that the entire time we were reading the cameo tonight, I just had chills because I feel like ever since I've come to your calls, Corinne, I've kind of been an advocate for the fact that we are all priests or priestesses, and we all have the same capacity to let God speak through us and to let miracles pass through our hands in God's name. And so when the angel references come up, I just laugh because of course, love is going to express itself in any way that we are going to understand it. And so for some people that will be angels, for some people it will not. Mm-hmm. But the form doesn't matter. It's all the same source that it comes from. And when you were talking about the numbers, I noticed you mentioned the whole thing about the selection bias. So, and we all have this, you know, innate kind of thing when spirit starts working with us, we think there's a part of our mind that is asleep that thinks, oh, that can't be true. That can't be accurate. I must be making it up. And I just want to say in my experience that is, we've normalized that. But it's actually not normal. Mm. Our normal is the miracles that Jesus has promised us in the Course. So that's all I wanted to share. I just feel like a smile come across my face when all these references come together, including the numbers, to just emphasize that the truth is true. So.
Oh, Deidre, thank you. Yes. Beautiful, beautiful points. I so appreciate hearing from you. And, you know, I just want to highlight what Cheryl just said before too, that Cheryl, you said that it's really been like alive for you about like the help, you know, from others, like the invisible. And I shared what I wrote, I think before we started recording. A question came up before we started recording, and I had just written right before the study group began, I know who I stand with now. So I have a little situation happening that it felt like a lot of old stuff was coming forward. And in feeling like I know who, with a capital W, who I stand with now, and it wasn't just a one who, it was like feeling angels and ancestors and like multiple again, there's all one, but we're fragmented. Not, that's not the right word. We're one and many simultaneously. I feel such a conviction of just knowing that. So Cheryl, I feel you and I hear you when you say that you're feeling it too. And so, yeah, I'll just stop rambling there. If you knew who walks beside you on the way that you have chosen, fear would be impossible. So each time we get these glimpses, these knowings, these feelings that we're not alone, it increases our trust and decreases our fear. Deidre, were you going to add more?
No, just I'm grateful for these calls, Corinne. Thank you so much for your service every week.
Thank you. Oh my gosh, thank you. You all, I'm so grateful for each and every one of you, because as we did in the meditation, this has happened so many times where I come into a call feeling like, you know, because things are happening and our joining, coming together, I am transformed through the call. And afterwards, I'm a different person than, you know, before. So I benefit just as much as anybody else from these joinings, from these calls. That's why I've been doing them for whatever, 10 years, 9 years, whatever it's been, I should look. I think it was 2011 when we began. So we should have like a 10-year-old birthday party or something.
Can I throw something in?
Yeah.
Hopefully you can hear me, but
I can.
It's so funny because I was going to tell a story and then all of a sudden you couldn't hear me. And so, you know what? I have such a strong connection to angels. I always have, but it's been like really, really strong lately, that even when I'm talking on the phone and I'm about to tell somebody something and it's something that I'm kind of like, should I tell this? Should I say this? They're going to think I'm nuts or whatever, you know, because I have a lot of like, miracles happening around me all the time, then if I'm not supposed to, and I'm going to do it anyway, the phone call will drop or something. And just like I was about to tell you my story, and then all of a sudden the volume went down and I'm like, that's okay. No problem. Because I've learned to just listen to it, because it happens to me so much. And talk about getting those numbers. I get those numbers all the time, you know, on the clock. Like I'll wake up in the middle of the night and look at the clock and there's a message for me. But So I didn't have a problem with my voice going away because I knew I wasn't supposed to share it.
Oh, Cheryl, that's funny. it's yeah, those. Yeah, that's something to trust for sure. And I can totally relate to that also, especially when you're like, not supposed to share, but I'm going to share anyway. So
it's really magical. Life is supposed to be magical. And I feel like the angels give us these nods that life is magical.
My friend Danielle, when I was telling her about the numbers, she was like, Corinne, those are angels, no doubt. She's like, she says, I think of angels as dolphins of the invisible, like playful, happy, like you're, you know, to just love and support and yeah, like playful.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
I love that. Corinne, can I just share something real quick?
Yeah, Carol, Mindy.
So we're talking about numbers, and I have to share that I have a friend that I was with for, well, actually a client of mine that I was with for over 2 years, and I have not seen her in over a year when we went into this quarantine pandemic thing. And her son got in touch with me last week because he moved in with her and he's needing to take his wife into the city for something. And he's asking me if I can be with her, and I'm vaccinated, she's vaccinated. We have had this connection for as long as I've known her with numbers. And she will say, oh, I woke up, it was 11:11 and I thought of you. Oh, it was, you know, 12:12. And we go on and on about this for all the time we've known each other. Mm-hmm. And so I haven't seen her for over a year. And I see these numbers and I think about her all the time. Mm. And this week I'm going to get to see her again.
Oh, yay.
She is going to be 102 on May the 15th.
Oh, wow.
And she has participated in this group before.
I know who you're talking about. That's awesome.
So I'm just, when you brought the numbers up, I had to share that because, I mean, it's definitely the angels working.
Thank you, Carol.
Thank you.
Give her my love, please. And I just realized, I feel like I could just keep chatting all night, that we're over time. So we'll get off in just a moment, but Dave.
Oh, just real quickly. I was helping somebody put a shortcut on their desktop today. And I was doing it with Zoom. You know, with Zoom, you can take control of somebody's computer and do remote, you know, work on somebody else's computer.
Wow.
And I had this, what I thought was a great idea, to put a shortcut to some Zoom meetings. And I have never had this happen before. I put the shortcut on there, and the person on the other end could not see it, and they could not, and neither of our mice would activate it. And you know, it was just like, okay, that's a pretty clear message. This just is not supposed to happen, you know? So it's kind of, you know, getting into just relaxing and knowing that in a way we're taken care of, you know, we're watched over, and some of the things, some of our great ideas aren't that great.
Right. That reminds me, Dave, of how the Course says, like, you judge some of your greatest setbacks. You think you did good, but not so much. Yeah. And yet you think that, you know, when things aren't going good, you've actually been making really great gains. So,
right. Yeah,
you know, not judge, but yeah.
Anyway, I just wanted to share that.
That's awesome. Thank you, Dave. Oh, all right, everyone. Thank you so much for joining. And as I said, we have one more cameo to go, and then we're going to start the manual for teachers, which is so fun. So I will see you all next week. I love you all very much. And thank you for being here. Good night, everyone.
Bye.
Thank
you. Love you all.
Bye.
Thanks.
Karen.
Bye. Bye, Carla. Bye, everyone.